I really like Sonny Gray. I think he's fantastic, but given where he's being drafted in terms of ADP, he's going inside the top 70 and inside the top 20 among starters ahead of Johnny Cueto, Adam Wainwright, Cole Hamels. I don't really see it.
Here's to us, November, and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove. We go down tonight.
Good evening, and welcome to episode 80 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as always, is Mike Ginella and George Bissell. How are you guys doing tonight? George, are you recovered from the terrible news of this afternoon?
I haven't yet. I had a Michael Scott-like reaction. It was a beautiful day. You know, I walked the dog. I come back, and there's like 50 texts on my phone with people saying sorry. And I thought something really horrible had happened. I was very concerned, and I checked my phone, and I found out that Carter Capps, it's not looking good. It's Monday night. It's not looking good. Very sad.
I thought this was going to be the TDGX, like Brett screwing the league thing that you were going to reference. You guys can save that for Tino.
That's a Tino topic.
Yeah,
that's a whole separate thing altogether. They can talk about how terrible I am on that podcast. All right. Well, we have a good show for you tonight. We have lots of talk about pitchers. Pitchers, and starting pitchers, not those really annoying relievers. We'll do that in a period of next week's show. Let's jump into it. You can find us at baseballprospectus.com. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. And George is at George Bissell. It's two S's and two L's. You can reach us via email at flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. And we ask that you rate and review us on iTunes or the Stitcher thingamajig. On that note, hold your breath for pitchers. We will be right back. And we're back. Hopefully you didn't actually hold your breath, although it probably was not a long enough break to make you die. So, like we did with outfield last week, we are going to forego the 2015 talk just to talk a lot about this year and these players, since there are just a ton of them. We at Baseball Prospectus, actually the second half of last week, we ranked a whole bunch of them. Mike, how many did we rank? 100, 125?
It was 100.
It was a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, if you know, six pitchers in a 15-team league or six starters, that's 90. So, yeah, that's a lot.
Yep. So we are going to start at the top and talk about some of the really fun guys. I guess, is there anything we need to say about Clayton Kershaw other than he's awesome?
The only thing I would say, I know there's some people – like Chris Liss of RotoWire is an example, who don't have a problem taking him number one overall. I wouldn't do that, but honestly, if that's your philosophy, that's fine. I just don't like taking a pitcher number one. That's the only bad thing I can say about Clayton Kershaw.
He had the lowest deserve run average of his career, 2.13. First guy to strike out 300 batters since 2002. He's like the Death Star right now. I mean, he's just seemingly indestructible force, and the reality is he's a pitcher. This could go south at any time. You just never know. So that's the caveat you have to say. But right now he's defying the odds in a way. I mean, how many thousands of guys go out and try and throw a baseball every year, and he's just the one guy who's that much better at it than everyone? That's just incredible to me.
Yeah. Really not more else to say other than that. So let's talk about what comes next. We have in our rankings the pitcher that the pitchers that round out the top five are Max Scherzer, Jake Arrieta, Chris Sale, and Madison Bumgarner. So Mike, these were your rankings. George, is there anyone else in this tier that you would slide into the top five, or is this pretty well set at this point?
No, I think the top five is pretty clear. It's weird because the guy who's going sixth in terms of average draft position is Jose Fernandez, and I think there's just a huge gap between him and some of the other guys afterwards. So I think the top five are pretty clear, and those are the only guys going in the first two rounds of drafts so far that, you know, that type of range. So I think it's pretty clear.
Okay, so we talked at decent length in our labor recap about Jake Arrieta, so we won't dive in too much there, but let's talk about Max Scherzer. Mike, what are your expectations for him in his second year in the National League in a really really friendly division for pitchers, as we've talked about before? Do you expect similar production to what he gave in 2015?
I think he could be a little bit better. George, were you the one who pointed this out either on Twitter or somewhere else that Scherzer had a kind of a weird home run burst?
Yeah, he had a weird stretch of starts where he allowed 4 earned runs or more in 10 of his 33 starts, and he allowed 27 home runs, which was his highest since 2011. There was actually a really good article that I referenced in my ADP analysis piece, which is up at Baseball Prospectus right now, but Dave Schoenfeld wrote about it, that a lot of the home runs he gave up were the result of missing location with his fastball, leaving it out over the plate. So that's an issue that's easily corrected, and if he's able to solve some of the home run problems, I mean, those 10 starts I referenced, they were bad, but he was great in the rest of his outings, so
yeah,
that's something he could fix.
You know, to get back to your question, you know, he just his CFIP and his DRA are both been really consistent. I would just expect him, you know, because of the division, and I said this about him last year, I thought that Scherzer, not Kershaw, was the guy who had an outside shot at 300 strikeouts. He struck out 276 last year. Just with those numbers and, you know, getting to face the Phillies, who are still rebuilding, getting to face the Braves, getting to face the Marlins, you know, who aren't quite as bad but still aren't quite as competitive, I could easily see Scherzer coming closer to those 300 strikeouts and putting up something more like a 2-4.
Yeah. I think Scherzer has plenty of upside here, there's really not much of a question in anyone's mind. He's the second pitcher off the board, right?
No. Right. I mean, I would have taken, you know, if you were there, you know, our pick in labor was in the middle of the second. I mean, if he were there at that point and it was a choice between Scherzer and Arrieta, as much as I love Arrieta, I would have taken Scherzer.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the back half of the guys in the five-star tier, where Greinke and Price are right next to each other in these ranks. They're both in new environments this year. They're both in slightly more hitter-friendly environments. Mike, do you think there is much concern for either of them where they're pitching in 2016?
No, maybe a little bit more for Greinke. I think I mentioned this in the tier article, which I wrote. Dodger Stadium is often mischaracterized as a pitcher's park. It's a bit of a pitcher's park for runs, but for home runs, it's a hitter's park. So I don't think the adjustment for Greinke is as radical as some people think. Alsing is a really good pitcher. He's somebody who should survive. The Pecota projection on him is about a 3-3. I think that's fair in terms of where he could wind up. Price, I'm just not concerned about. He's moving from Toronto to Boston. He pitched for the Rays, which was a pitcher's park, but he's pitched in the AL East his whole career except for that brief time with Detroit. So Price is just money to me. He's a consistent workhorse kind of a pitcher. He won't get into that top five unless he has a career year, which I don't expect. But he's so safe. He's one of the safest pitchers in this tier, which is saying something.
Just going the opposite side now and talking about pitchers who are not quite so safe. Steven Strasburg sneaks into the five-star tier here. George, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not at all, 10 being a frightening amount, how much does Strasburg scare you in 2016?
It's like a 7. A lot of his struggles early on, I remember he had, what, a 6 ERA, I think it was, in May or June. A lot of it was injury-related. Came back, looked pretty good down the stretch. He just kind of has never really put it all together in a single campaign. And when you look at investing in a guy as one of the top 10 pitchers off the board, that's a lot of risk to be taking on when he's going in the range of someone like Gerrit Cole, Jacob DeGrom, Madison Bumgarner. I mean, we're talking about guys who we've seen do it year in and year out, Price and Greinke. There's a lot more risk in terms of Strasburg relative to the rest of the guys going in this five-star tier. Certainly, he has the talent to justify it, but it just seems like every year something happens, and that's sort of buying into a narrative a little bit, but you can't deny the evidence so far that we have.
Yeah, Mike, the one thing that kind of jumps out to me about this top tier, and we've talked about this in context of individual pitchers, but there are 13 pitchers here, and 10 of them are in the National League. Do you think that this is a direct result of the National League being just a much friendlier place for a pitcher to exist, or do you think there's an actual real talent imbalance as far as where pitching resides in baseball?
I think it's more the former. You know, that right now and even before this year with all of the National League teams, whether you want to call it tanking or rebuilding, that there's so many National League teams at the bottom right now. You have the Reds, you have the Brewers, you have the Phillies. You know, we've talked a lot about this already on the show. I won't rehash it. Who are not, you know, are rebuilding. They're not playing for this year. Some of their lineups are weak or soft. Whereas the American League, I think Jesse Spector of the Sporting News made this point in one of his pieces, every team in the American League theoretically has a chance or some kind of opportunity. Yes, even the Mariners have a bit of a chance to make the playoffs or at least be competitive. So as a result, Chris Sale is a good example. If you're talking about raw skills, you could make a case that Chris Sale's better than Jake Arrieta, and I wouldn't argue with you. I'd say, okay, they're both really good, but in a neutral environment, if I had to choose one, I'd probably take Sale. And you could go the other way and take Arrieta too, but those are fair arguments. When you factor in the fantasy factor of what I expect from them, and it's not just Arrieta facing the pitcher, you know, one or two times a game, I think there's a real advantage there in fantasy, and more so than ever, you have to keep that in mind. And I think less in this tier and more, and we'll get into this as you go down into like the 4-star and the 3-star, you really have to start looking at that and considering that when you build your team.
Yep. I pretty much agree exactly with that. Especially we've talked about this. We don't need to rehash this, but it's just I think you're absolutely right. I think it shows up more dramatically at the end because you can take these guys who are in the 1 and 2 star tier and you can match them up in these matchups against these teams that are going to be pretty bad, and it'll give you more flexibility as far as having additional pitchers on your bench. But we'll get there as we move down the list. Anyone else you guys want to talk about in particular in the 5-star tier? We didn't talk about either of the Mets. Is there a ton to say about either Jacob DeGrom or Matt Harvey?
They deserve to be in this tier. There's huge upside there. I think the price is fair.
Harvey has a little bit more of that second year coming off of Tommy John upside. DeGrom, I don't want to say his downside, but you know, if he puts up this Pecota projection of a 3-1 and a 1-1-1, I wouldn't be shocked. I want to talk about Kluber a little bit, just because the thing about Corey Kluber, we didn't talk about valuation, you know, tonight, but Corey Kluber in AL only was, you know, just a shade behind, you know, some of the best pitchers in the American League. He earned $24 or $2 behind Chris Sale. And Kluber had 9 wins last year. It's hard to say he's being undervalued because he is in this top tier. He's being drafted competitively in NFBC leagues. But wins are very fluky, and he had about as few wins as you could expect given his skills. I just wouldn't be surprised at all if Kluber had one of those years this year where he put up 17 wins and had an ERA closer to 3. And if he does that, he's going to earn over 30. He's not a sleeper, obviously, because he's in this tier. But there's just some potential here for more.
Sounds good. Anyone else to touch on before we move to the 4-star?
Nope.
That's it for me. Right.
Let's do a little lightning round before we dive a little further into some of these players. Over under on innings pitched for Jose Fernandez, 172.5. Mike.
I'm going slightly under. As you were asking that question, 170 popped into my mind. I think 165 to 170 for him.
George?
Under. I'm going to say 170 as well.
So next question. Mike, more strikeouts in 2016, Noah Syndergaard or Chris Archer?
I'm going to go with Syndergaard. First of all, he brings the heat, and some of this is what we talked about with the National League versus the American League. I'm not down on Archer exactly, but he did stumble a little bit down the stretch. You do want to be careful with the first half, second half numbers. I still think Archer's very good, but I'm a little bit wary of him for that reason. So I'm going with Thor.
Okay. George, more innings pitched in 2016. John Lester or Sonny Gray?
John Lester.
Mike, bet 4-star pitcher with the better chance of returning to his 5-star glory in 2016. Felix Hernandez or Johnny Cueto?
I'd say Felix, although if I had to truthfully answer, it would be neither. I'm a little bit scared. Well, scared's a strong word, but I'm thinking that Felix is never going to return to that level, but just based on the volume I expect from Felix, as opposed to Cueto, who, to be fair, he's provided that volume in the past, but Felix, I think, has a bit more of the ceiling, so I'm going to go with Felix.
Okay, last one, George. More AL Cy Young votes this year, Carlos Carrasco or Dallas Keuchel?
Boy, that's a tough one. I think you have to give it to Keuchel, don't you? I mean, you do. I really like Carlos Carrasco because their defense improved so much when they got Lindor at shortstop and Urshela at third base. I mean, they were historically bad at the start of the year last year, and you saw the improvements they made. Carrasco's CFIP was, I think, only Kershaw and Chris Sale had a lower CFIP than him, which is saying something. So I think Carrasco is going to be really good, but it's hard to deny how good Keuchel really is. He's outstanding.
So let's talk about some individual players here. Anyone you guys want to start with? I have one guy who I want to talk about, but we can get there eventually.
I was going to say Adam Wainwright.
Let's talk about Adam Wainwright.
Okay. Go ahead, Brian.
No, you brought him up. You go.
You know, Wainwright's funny because, you know, last year we took him in labor and we were aggravated because everybody said he was a risk because he was going to get hurt and not make it to 200 innings and he was going to be diminished. And he looked fine for 4 starts before an Achilles injury knocked him out. So now he has a year of rest, pretty much. He did pitch in the bullpen at the end of the season, but he has a full year of rest, and his arm is rested, and he's just one of those pitchers who always manages, despite the fact that he never quite looks like the horse that some of the guys in the 5-star tier do. He just has that potential, and he's underrated every year. And I think we talked about this in a previous podcast, or maybe it was off-air before the podcast, where we were talking about how old do you think Adam Wainwright is? And George, you might have guessed like 36, and even Brett, who loves Wainwright, might, I guess, older. Wainwright's 34 years old. And the downside of the arm injuries he's had is that he could slip, he could get injured again. But the upside of his injuries is he doesn't have a lot of mileage on that arm. I can still see a pretty solid year coming out of him. And of all the pitchers here, based on where they're being drafted, I kind of like the value proposition of somebody who could jump up into that five-star tier.
Yeah, for me, Wainwright seems like a safer version of Sonny Gray. And we can get into this when we talk about Gray, because George wants to talk about him. But, you know, it's the same type of profile. It's not overwhelming strikeouts, but both should give you 215 to 220 solid innings with really strong ratios and probably 175 to 180 strikeouts if things go well. St. Louis just has the better team. And you know, we talk about the National League difference, but it makes a pretty big difference there. And Wainwright gets there are two teams right in his backyard that, even though they play in some hitter friendly parks, that they are trotting out some pitcher friendly lineups. So I think he is being underserved this year in fantasy drafts, and I think it speaks a little bit to the age and to the layoff. But I agree with Mike. I don't think the layoff is a bad thing. He came back at the end of last season as a reliever, so it's not like he's just ramping up from scratch this year and didn't come back at all last year. It wasn't a starting role, but still. So George, why don't we piggyback here and jump into you talking about Sonny Gray?
Well, I think a lot of the issues I have with Sonny Gray is that he's a guy who, yeah, he's thrown 200 innings, you know, each of the last 2 years, but his strikeout rate has dipped. He only had 169 strikeouts last year, and his BABIP is still crazy low. And I really like Sonny Gray. I think he's fantastic, but given where he's being drafted in terms of ADP, he's going inside the top 70 and inside the top 20 among starters, ahead of Johnny Cueto, Adam Wainwright, Cole Hamels. I don't really see it, because his upside is a little bit limited. He's not a guy who I think can get to 200 strikeouts. And I think Wainwright's, honestly, I think a little bit better. I just think if Wainwright's at 100%, I think he's going to give you more pretty much across the board. And I worry a little bit about some of the contextual factors with Gray. I talked a little bit about the defense, but they're saying they're not going to trade him, but it's Oakland, and this is not going to be a good team at all. I just think, given where Gray's being drafted, I think I like a lot of the other pitchers a lot more in that range relative to him. I just don't see huge upside here. I think a lot of the profit's already built into what you're paying on draft day with Gray. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I agree with all. I had the same feeling.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So the guy who I want to talk about is Cole Hamels, and he's going to be pitching a full season in Texas this year. He was pretty good when he got to Texas last year. Not quite as good as he was in Philly, but that's, you know, that's to be expected. There's a transition. There's a transition period. All that stuff we know. But, you know, Hamels has been really the same guy forever. And he's only 32 years old season long. The Rangers are poised to be a pretty good team. And I just don't see why he is. I don't see why he is not towards the top of this four star tier. I think he's got a good shot of winning games. He struck out 215 last year. So it's not like he's in this Wainwright and Sonny Gray range where you're looking at, you know, maybe 170 to 180 strikeouts. He certainly can give you 200 strikeouts even with a full season in the American League. It's also a profile that lends itself to aging well, given that he's given that he's more of a he's more reliant on his changeup than his breaking pitches. But Mike, for you, what is it that's keeping Hamels from being up in that Felix and Cueto and Archer range, or Lester, that range there?
It's probably just the fact that he's pitching in Texas, and I know what our metrics say because I looked at it. Arlington isn't quite the home run park that it once was, but it still plays that way. And I just look at Hamels, and he's one of those pitchers who I believe he's going to be fine. We talked about Sale. He's going to be fine from a skills perspective, but from an actual numbers perspective, he's kind of the antithesis of Gray. I'd be willing to bet that Hamels' DRA and his CFIP in 2016 are going to be better than Gray's. I'd also be willing to bet that Hamels' ERA is going to be higher. So if you factor in the strikeouts and Gray's are lower, it's fair to say that they could have comparable fantasy value. But I think pitching in Arlington and all those factors do create a bit of a ceiling for Hamels, where he's a legitimate ace in real life, or, you know, maybe a 1B, if you will. But he's not quite going to get there because of the American League and because of the Arlington factor.
Okay, that's fair. I like him a lot. I think he pitches through it better than I think that supposes.
The way I look at it with Hamels is that I look at Darvish, or Yu Darvish, before he got hurt, and where his strikeout rate was, it was so good and it was so terrific. I saw him as potentially, you know, being that five-star pitcher. With Hamels, as solid and consistent as he's been, he's never struck out that many guys. And we're at a point in baseball where strikeouts are so high and so prolific that, as good as Hamels is, and this really isn't a knock on Hamels, this is just a sign of how many strong pitchers there are. That's kind of why I have him at the bottom of this tier. But to your point, Brett, I could see him being at the top of the tier. It certainly wouldn't shock me if he was a top 15 pitcher this year.
Yeah, I think the advantage that he has over he won't strike out as many guys as peak Darvish, and that it won't particularly be close. If he did, I agree, he'd certainly be a five-star guy. But you know, you get sort of there's a governor on his whip. It's been really, really consistent over the past 6 years. It hasn't been above 1.2 since 2009. And you know, it, given the innings that he logs, and ERA can be fluky. He could, you know, he could certainly have a 3.75 ERA in Texas and not be a bad pitcher at all. But he also could have a 2.75 ERA, and that's just the way those things work. Let's have a little fun in this tier, because this tier is just absolutely enormous. What's your over under on innings for Carlos Martinez? Put it at not what's your over under. I'll put it at 177.5. Are you taking the over or the under?
Under. Slightly.
I'll go with the under.
Internet's not good right now.
I probably should have directed that at somebody.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the under. I think 140 or 150 is a safer number for him.
Yep. Okay. George, more strikeouts in 2016, James Shields or Shelby Miller?
I'll say James Shields, because didn't he have a career high strikeout rate last year? It was over a strikeout per inning. I mean, he was terrible. He gave up 33 home runs in San Diego. But I think he will strike out more batters than Shelby Miller. I'll give him that. I don't like James Shields, but he will strike out some people.
Yeah. Over under on return date for Yu Darvish, June 2nd.
I think he'll be back in late May, so I'm not sure which direction is the over under on this, but I'm going to say late May.
All right. So we could do this for longer, but let's talk about some names individually on this list. George, who do you think is particularly interesting here?
Well, we talked a lot about him late last year, but a guy who's getting a lot of hype is Raisel Iglesias, and I want to kind of pump the brakes on that a little bit, just because I don't think the innings are necessarily going to be there for him this year. If you look at last year, he threw about 124 innings last year, and remember, he was a reliever in Cuba. It was his first season stateside. I don't think, and you look at the Reds, the way they're constructed this year, he's maybe their best pitcher other than Anthony DeSclafani. They're not going to push him over 200 innings in a meaningless season. I just don't think that's going to happen. So in order for him to really have substantial value, I don't think he's going to get the innings to make that happen this year. So that's my big concern with him. So I think there are some names I'd rather have than Iglesias, because I don't doubt the talent at all with him. I just don't think he's going to get enough innings to really make a huge difference, and that there's a shutdown coming late in the year with him too.
So there are definitely some other interesting names here that of guys that are unlikely to throw 200 innings. You have pitchers like Patrick Corbin, who I'd be surprised if the Diamondbacks let go past about 170, 175 innings, given his limited return from Tommy John last year. There are, mentioned Lance McCullers. Lance McCullers is probably not going to throw 200 innings. Steven Matz has, the Mets talk about kind of slowing him down at the beginning of the season, and I'm sure they'll utilize a spot start or five from Bartolo Colon, which will give Matz a rest, especially when Zach Wheeler comes back. And then there's the guys who might not reach there realistically because they just are unlikely to stay healthy to reach 200 innings. Guys like Masahiro Tanaka, like Michael Pineda, and I don't want to just pick on Yankee starters, but Luis Severino is not going to throw 200 innings either. So it leaves you with an interesting slate of pitchers. You get those guys who have higher upside, but then you have your Jake Odorizzi's and Wei Yin Chen's and James Shields and Shelby Miller's, guys that don't quite have that elite upside, but are much better bets to give you 200-210 innings. Who's a guy in this tier for you that you think is a good bet to clear 200 innings and stay standing towards the end of the tier at the end of the year?
Oh, just because he's done in the past and he's moving back to the National League, I like Jeff Samardzija to do that. I could see him, last year he certainly had problems in the American League with the White Sox, but innings were not one of those problems, and it's very easy to see Dave Rigetti's fairly good at keeping his pitchers going, while they are actually healthy. And because Samardzija doesn't have health issues, because in the National League and the NL West, he's a pretty good bet. We mentioned Shields before. He'd be the other guy just because he's done it before and he's the workhorse, but that's kind of the boring answer. So I'm going to go with Samardzija.
Jose Quintana is definitely a guy who'll give you 200 innings.
He's really, really solid. There's nothing wrong with Jose Quintana.
He's sort of underrated. Like, he'll never, I shouldn't say never. It's very unlikely he'll break out of this tier. But on the other hand, it's very unlikely he'll be below this tier. He is what he is.
I don't think we mentioned Marcus Stroman either. He's not a guy who'll get the 200 innings this year either. I don't think.
No, probably not. Who will, though, is John Lackey. I think, Lackey's an interesting case because he had a much better season in 2015 than I think anyone really anticipated. Did you know that he finished ninth in Cy Young Award voting in the National League?
He was damn good last year.
Yeah.
He really was.
He's fun.
So he's going to be pitching for a lot of innings for what should be one of the best teams in the National League, in the Cubs. And, he's aging, but he's still 36 or no, he's sorry. He turned 37 in the offseason. I thought he was going to be 36 at the beginning of the season. But, you know, he's still striking out batters. He struck out 175 last year. He's essentially doing exactly what Sonny Gray does, right?
Yeah. You want to put it that way.
Yeah. So what's the difference other than Lackey pitches for a good team?
He's old.
Yeah.
That's it. This is what I was kind of alluding to. I mean, you can get sort of what Sonny Gray gives you, a lesser version, a little bit later, much later. It's yeah, the reality of what his profile is. I'm sorry.
In this case, it might not even be a lesser version.
Yeah, it's fair. There's more risk with Lackey because of the age, but that's really just, you know, you get that with any older pitcher.
Yeah. I'd have to go look at the DRA with Lackey. I know with the FIP, you know, and George, you're going to slap me on the wrist for using it, but I know with the FIP that every year it's significantly higher than, or the last couple of years in particular with St. Louis, it's significantly higher than the ERA. And some of that is positioning with St. Louis and the way they position their infielders as well as the defense itself. I know the Cubs are good at that, but there's some of that concern that in his first year with the Cubs, there just could be a natural spike in his ERA just to all due to the fact of all of those factors not being there.
So let's slide down to the two star tier, since these pitchers are less interesting, and let's play a little game here. Let's take. Since this is so wide ranging from top to bottom, Mike, these are your rankings here. But George and I are going to essentially draft guys in the two star tier that we like better than they are ranked on this list, and talk about why for about 15 seconds, and then Mike, you can tell us why we're wrong. How does that sound?
Okay.
Who's got the first pick? Brett, you can go first.
George, you go. You want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
Okay. I am going to take Wade Miley, which is kind of the cop out because he's at the very, very bottom of this list.
Damn you!
But, unlike a lot of the players ahead of him, I think he is more or less a lock to throw 190 innings, and he'll do that in Safeco, which is lazy analysis but true analysis. He was not great in Boston, but considering the defense and considering the move to the American League, which he made for the first time last year, I think he could put up a pretty solid season in Seattle and be a prime two-star guy.
I'll take Anthony DeSclafani. I believe in the arsenal. I think it's getting better. I like some of the changes he's made there. He wasn't terrible last year. He was pretty good down the stretch. I think the workload will be there. He's probably the Reds' best pitcher outside of Iglesias. I'll take DeSclafani. I'll take a flyer there and hope that he evolves into something a little bit more. If the strikeouts tick up a little bit, you're looking at I like him.
Okay. I am going to take Joe Ross, and I'm going to make the argument that I think Ross is a three-star guy. I think you can put him in the three-star group, and I think he belongs. I think he's his talent level is high, and the competition he's facing is going to be weak. And I think there's another step forward for him to take in 2016. To be a, you know, top 40, top 50 starter.
I'll go Mike Leake. Dependability, innings. He's not great, but he's not going to hurt you too much. I like the move to St. Louis a little bit. Just they have some of that magic there in St. Louis. I don't know what it is, but I think Mike Leake's maybe the most solid name in this tier. I mean, you touched on Wade Miley, but I think Mike Leake, year in and year out, it's just money in the bank, innings wise.
And we'll do one more each. I'm going to take Ian Kennedy because the Royals are magic, and I don't understand it. I still don't understand how Edinson Volquez was as good as he was last year, and I just have to throw up my hands and say that it's some sort of magic and that it will rub off on Ian Kennedy.
Outfield defense, my friend. Very good. I'll go Kyle Hendricks with the final pick. I like some of the steps forward that he made. The strikeouts were up last year. I think if he holds off Adam Warren, he's a guy who could get into the three-star tier. There's a chance. But I think at the very least, he's going to finish near the top of this tier. And I think the innings will be there. I think he can get to 160, 180 innings, no problem. And that's a good team in Chicago, too. Like, he's going to have a chance to win some games.
Yeah. So, Mike, did we say anything dumb?
No. Do I have to knock all these guys down, or should I just knock down the ones that play the devil's advocate?
Yeah, you can play devil's advocate on as many or as few of those guys as you want.
Well, let's see. So I'll start at the bottom. So I think Wade Miley's serviceable. I just don't see as much. You know, we've talked about this offline, Brett. I just don't see as much ceiling as you do. I do agree the Safeco bump helps, but except for that one year where he struck out, I think it was over 8 batters per 9, he's just never been a big strikeout guy. So he is prone a little bit to what his defense will or won't give him. So yeah, he could be at the top of this tier, but if the ball doesn't bounce his way, he could be at the bottom of it or even the one star tier. DeSclafani really great out of the chute last year for I think it was 6 or 7 or 8 starts, and then after that he was just kind of pedestrian. I think he's appropriately valued here. I'm not suggesting he should be lower, but he's a pitcher on a team with that's rebuilding, that outside of Joey Votto, if they make some other trades, if Jay Bruce gets traded, if Brandon Phillips gets traded, it could be a really young team, could really suffer with less of a defense behind him. Ian Kennedy, I agree with those arguments. The other side of the coin with Kennedy, he was so bad last year. And I do agree that the Royals, as you put it, are magic. But it's entirely possible that he's just lost and he can be one of those pitchers in the American League moving out of the NL West. There's that potential for him to be really bad. I like Kennedy better in a format where you can reserve him and stream him. If you have to have him in your lineup every week or cut him, I would actually move him down. Mike League's fine. He's just kind of vanilla, though. He's sort of boring. He's George, you're right. He's fine, but he's just kind of a vanilla, boring pitcher. Joe Ross, very good. I would agree on his ceiling, but the other side of Ross, the thing that would give me pause, I don't know what his inning ceiling is. I don't know what he would look like with a full season. We haven't seen it yet. I don't think the Nationals have an innings limit this year, but I don't know what the endurance will look like. The one guy here I do like that was mentioned was Kyle Hendricks. I'm a big fan, so I don't want to knock him down. The only caution with him is Adam Warren, and what, you know, if that is actually no competition, you know, God forbid you spend in the three-star tier to draft Hendricks and he starts out in the bullpen or AAA. I think that whole thing is unfortunate. I hope it's just a psychological thing that's going on in Chicago in spring training, but it's been reported from pretty good sources that that's a possibility. So you do have to be a little cautious, but I like the skills of Hendricks and I think it could be really good.
I think I won. Just saying.
So yeah. Hendricks?
Yeah, I just have two things to throw out on what Mike said. Joe Ross, I think that's the innings are a valid concern. He threw 153 innings between the majors and the minors last year. So even with a team that is poised for contention like the Nationals, I doubt they let him really get past about 185, 190 innings. So yeah, I don't think he'll pitch a full season, but there are, you know, like we said, there are plenty of players in the three-star tier that I don't think will pitch a full season either. So so I don't think that precludes him from that. And the really interesting thing about Anthony DeSclafani is you talk about his really, really strong start to the season. His numbers are really fascinating. If you look at his first half versus second half numbers, In the first half, he had a 3.65 ERA. In the second half, he had an ERA that was almost a run higher. It was 4.52. But the weird thing is that in the first half, he had a 17% strikeout rate and almost 10% walk rate. In the second half, he had a 22% strikeout rate and a 4% walk rate.
Yeah.
So he, over the course of the season, he turned into one of those guys that makes you hate xFIP. And I genuinely don't know which of those guys he's going to be going forward. I think there's, you know, you make the argument with guys like that they, you know, they throw too many strikes, and it hurts their ability to avoid hard contact. But really, Di Sclafani could go in a number of different directions. I don't think he has elite upside or anything. But if he can take the positives from his first half and the positives from his second half and put them together a little bit, then you could have a really solid mid rotation guy.
He's the new Ricky Nolasco.
And
like.
On that note, it is time to. Huh, yeah, the new Dave Bush.
Oh God!
So now we're gonna go to the we're gonna go to everyone's favorite game, the pick your one star guy. There are a billion guys in this tier, so we can each pick our regular guy, and then we can go through again and without explanation, just say who our second guy would have been out of someone who hasn't been taken. So, Mike, you're up first this week. Who's your guy?
I could go with my value pick, but since everybody can read that and it's just redundant, I'm going to go with somebody else. I'm going to go with John. I like the move to Pittsburgh. It's a really favorable park shift for him. It's one of the few shifts where you're getting an advantage because he's a lefty in that park. Better outfield defense. I could just see Nice putting up a 3-4 with the Pirates. You've also got the Ray Searage factor. There's a lot going for him. You're not getting, we talked before about the pitchers, you're not getting volume. So you're not going to get 200 innings of this, but I could see getting 170 really solid innings out of John Nice. And in this tier, that's not bad.
George?
I'm going to go with Jose Berrios as my first guy. Look, there's no nice way to put this, but the Minnesota Twins rotation is a disaster. They have just nothing there. I mean, Ervin Santana is the number one. Tyler Duffy's intriguing, but they're looking at starting either Tommy Malone or Ricky Nolasco as their number five to start the year. And Berrios, there's not a whole lot left to prove. I mean, he was fantastic in 12 starts in AAA, led the minors with 175 strikeouts last year. The arsenal's polished. He's going to be up very soon, by May, I would assume at the latest, and the innings will be there. He's going to pitch, and he's talented, and I think that's what you look for in a one-star guy.
All right, my guy is the last guy that you squeezed onto this list, and I'm pretty sure you only squeezed him onto this list because I begged you to squeeze him onto this list.
You are.
And that is Martin Perez. I have been a big Martin Perez fan for a while. He was really starting to show signs of improvement heading into his extended absence from Tommy John surgery. He's now more than 18 months removed, and I think this is the year that he reestablishes his value as a guy who should be pretty locked in as a mid-range fantasy pitcher for the next, you know, at least half decade. So he's my guy. He's got the number five spot, I think, all but locked up at this point, barring injury, especially with Darvish being out. So opportunity shouldn't be an issue. But yeah. So really, really quickly, Mike, who would your next guy be without any explanation?
Probably Rick Porcello.
George?
Daniel Norris of the Tigers.
And I'm gonna And I'm going to go with Anibal Sanchez. So
fellow
there you have it, folks. Yeah, we made it through despite technical difficulties. Hopefully those will be resolved by next week. But we will take a quick break and we'll be right back. Thank you very much for listening to episode 80 of Flags Fly Forever. We have been a Baseball Prospectus fantasy podcast. Read us at baseballprospectus.com and stick around to see how many times I can say Baseball Prospectus in one sentence. Baseball Prospectus. You can find us all on Twitter. We put our Twitter handles out there before. I'm not going to read them again. We will be back next week to talk about relievers, and I believe we will have a special guest next week. I will not spoil who that is. You will just have to stay tuned and find out. This coming this week right now is our last week of starting pitching coverage at Baseball Prospectus. Next week is relievers, and then we are done with our 10-month positional preview series. And then we get into our regular coverage and the regular season and everyone's drafts, and everyone is super happy, and that makes me super happy. So on that note, let's get out of here. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.